Okay, team. I've been waiting for this chart to pull into its exactitude because it's for this chart that I came. I will explain. But first, we begin with Muti. As some of you know who've been hanging with me for a while, Muti means power and medicine. It's from the Sangomas of South Africa. So I have some tobacco from Syria, some coyote hair, some cannabis as Muti. So we begin with Muti, power and medicine. And we say, O spirit of the compassionate trickster awaiting birth in each one of our hearts, open the path before each one of us, that we may do the most good while having the most fun. And as practitioners of magic, we say, free us from ego magic and fill us with the craft of our ancestors, that we may name with our head, our heart, and our instinct all that everyone names for their greater health, happiness, and contribution of their gifts to the collective at this time of dire beauty. There goes the cannabis and the Syrian tobacco and the everything. There you go. So yes, live, I am here live from the underworld, me and Ruth Bader Ginsburg. It's true, we are teammates. And so part of what I've been brewing, again, the micro, the macro, I love this chart. I love this chart. And when I was wondering, for reasons that will become clear, whether I could be here today, I was like, oh, no, 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 no. And then I looked at the chart and I'm like, ah, this is it. Whoever's here, this is the wizard team, right? This is a powerful ritual, magic, download, whatever we need kind of chart. This is like why we're here. Again, Dion Fortune said the purpose of ritual magic, which is the Virgo realm, is to spiral expanded wisdom and tolerance into group mind. Right? And that's really, here we are at the, where we've outsourced leadership to the nadir of devolutionary whatever of our rogue species. Like, no other species would outsource leadership to such a toxic mimic of Saturn, right? So situation's dire, dangerous, but there is trickster afoot. I want to bring in everything that I love so much. So this chart brought me here because I was going, I'm not sure. And then I look at the chart and I go, this is fantastic. And this is why we gather. I love the eighth house. I love the eighth house in Virgo. So Virgo, our craft. In the underworld, that fabulous Mercury at six Virgo, trining the ascendant at six Capricorn, heavily veiled hierophant, seized by the divine, leads a powerful ritual. This will do. Right. And so, exactly trine Uranus stationing at six Taurus, exactly trining back. And we go, oh, we love that, the eighth house. Now, the medievals thought that grand trines were great blessings and great difficulties because they are what they look like. It's a self-enclosed system of grace. So it's always that issue of will I do it or will we do it, what we know must be done, what we can do, or will it just be an interior possibility? So what we want when we see a grand trine in our collective chart for our adventure here and the many ways we can travel together now is to see something challenging, something difficult, cracking into the grand trine to incentivize us into doing what's easy. We go, oh, fortunately, there's all kinds of stuff. That Mercury at six, and remember the new moon when this conference started, at the exact new moon, it was 6 degrees Virgo rising, 6 degrees Virgo moon and sun, 6 degrees part of fortune. We go, six, 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 six. And then we got the six, six. We go, and again, part of our love of we are pattern trackers, and always, what is unique to our species aside from our rudeness? And it might be a Saturn-Jupiter thing, a responsibility, opportunity to borrow qualities of intelligence from flora, fauna, kin. That might be part of it that we're going to bring up with Uranus and Taurus and the collaborative animism that yearns to take place and even available for our pledges today, now, for fun. So language craft, eighth house. I love the eighth house. We want to be liberating everything. We've all been given a customized underworld, a Saturn-Pluto kind of dynamic. And so one of the qualities of astrology is it's this exquisite language of our interior psyche and its connection by a thin membrane we call identity to the whole vast pulsing collective design. So this chart and every quality of it is occurring in each one of us in a customized way. You know, we're all in this dream together, and who brought what? And, you know, in the underworld journey, you know, there's a very Saturn quality, which is, all right, everybody, let us practice what we've been preaching, proffering. Let's put everything to the Capricorn test. Let's prepare for Jupiter and Sagittarius, our syncretized selves, all the different chapters of our life, different qualities we've cultivated, and that syncretism is a sacrament. What we want now is Sufi, Aikido, Celtic, Voodoo, add everything else in there, yeah. Because people were like, how are you dressed? And we go, Middle Eastern, Southwestern kind of thing. We're working lots of things, you know, syncretize. And then, remember, we're waiting for Jupiter to enter Capricorn at the end of this year, you know, all of that abstraction into manifest incarnational actuality. This is democratic animism. I'll explain what I mean by that. But also, because I am in an exciting protocol, I am a legal cannabis imbiber. So in honor of Angel Thompson and all of our great ancestors, if I am a little spacey, then your job is to remember what I was about to say. and we'll get on just fine. So there's a lot that I yearn to convey, but we want to keep authentically, resonantly equal. Like, is this working for everybody? You know, because there's so much power here. So if Dion Fortune says the purpose of ritual magic is to spiral into group mind, expanded wisdom and tolerance, I love the eighth house because we take everything back. The Uranus kind of dynamic is, let's take everything back to its originating, liberating spark before it was bamboozled, hoodwinked, orthodox, or inquisitioned. Because all the players are in play, right? What did it want to be before it got trapped? And part of my love of the Uranus-Taurus dynamic, Uranus and Taurus for these next 7 years, these next crucial 7 years of humans forming working alliances with what they love, to protect water, become like water, to protect wolves, become like wolves, and to pledge our troth even this hour-ish together, you know, is a download possibility. So the eighth house, what did it want to be? What is it intrinsically? So years ago, when I was first starting the Visionary Activist Show, and I was living, beginning to live with an actual coyote, Stella, which I did for 19 years, and I hosted a Lakota elder, and he said, oh, coyote's nothing smarter. You know, he said, we Lakota did not hunt alone. Those gifted would go backstage, eighth house, very backstage, you know, and they would enter into a negotiation with the environment and work out a deal. And he said, and we would work out a deal with the wolves and coyotes, and we would all hunt together for a season. And if you want to destroy a culture and have, you know, colonialism's war on imagination, and you know, then all you have to do is shame people out of what they should be most proud of, their democratic animism, their pragmatic mysticism, and then you can trample all over everything, right? So that's something I carry with me always as an eighth house thing. And when I speak to the eighth house in all of us today and in people, I go, many good questions for eighth house, you know, but we also take it all the way back just for the fun of it and go, you would have been one of those people who goes backstage into a Neptunian reverie, this is all quite available now, you know, emerges going, well, it took a little, you know, it was like buying a carpet in the Middle East. You know, it took a while. You know, the coyotes want the front left leg and half the liver of every other deer, and the wolves are cool with that, and the deer are cool with that. Everybody back on stage. So this realm of our potential influence, I think, is crucial for what we're all headed into, you know, and that we use all of our skills. A friend was asked what his definition of maturity is, a kind of Saturn question. And he said, to have access to all of one's resources. And I go, that's pretty good. That's a good starter. And what more than this fabulous language gives voice, crafty voice, to all of our resources, all of our customized uniqueness that also, you know. So I love Virgo as language craft, as one of the great ancient technologies of intimate cooperation with the world. So language specificity, and when we talk about journeying in the underworld and the eighth house quality of being a detective, and part of the beauty of this language inviting us all to think of our lives as though they were spiritual detective novels, in which everything, every quirky affinity is a clue worthy of wonder and honor in some way. So I began to wonder, like, what are the oldest detective novels that we have? Because I go myth, fairy tale, detective novels, same themes of the necessary journey to the underworld to save the world. And so it turns out 232 BC in China is the oldest detective novels we know of so far, written on bamboo paper, and they're pitching to us. Like, everything ancestral is pitching, all the myths, all the stories, they're like, oh God, help the humans out to rejoin the choreography of creation. You know, it's like all of creation is meeting backstage going, what are we gonna do about the humans? We gotta either kill them or heal them. Let's do both. But let's make everything that has ever moved humans to conscious participatory kinship available for fresh expression. Every mystery school, everything, every part of our unique dedication, everybody's got a piece of the puzzle, you know, and it's eager to be, you know, animated now. So the language craft, what the Chinese detective novels said, they said, if the purpose of the magistrate, you could fill in astrologer, is to dive into the underworld in order to align with the mandate of heaven and earth. That's what they said in 232 BC in China. And they go, if you are going to dive into the underworld, there's some guidelines they're pitching to us now. And they said, it's important, it's good to have a buddy with whom to exchange dark, they didn't say platonic, but platonic humor and spiciness. It's good to be jaunty, no matter what. And they say, when you journey in the underworld, your primary protection is authenticity. Authenticity. They say, if you are authentic, and this is, I think, a Saturn theme in all of our Saturn appointments, you know, it's like we wake up in the morning and we go, here's me, there's the outer structure of my life, does it match? You know, and the degree to which it doesn't necessarily is a necessary friction to inspire our experimentation. So the Saturn model of authenticity, we aspire that our inner and outer selves match. And that in our language craft, our language, story, and metaphor be in accord with our dedicated hearts. Because, you know, we say some things are always true, but there are times when they are truer. And we go, ooh, and look at the Saturn sextile Neptune, that metaphors are the incarnational garb whereby power enters the world. And the sextile 60-degree creative angle to Saturn says they are especially eager to incarnate. You know, into this cauldron, we have a customized underworld and a customized cauldron into which to throw things and from which to ladle things. And this is where we all get to be engaged in imaginative ways. You know, what do we want to toss into the cauldron and what do we want to ladle out? And what might we want to toss into the cauldron with certain Saturn standards, Saturn Virgo standards of discernment? So for me, you know, and everyone kind of work on their own, I go, everything into the cauldron. Astrology, all sacred teachings, everything, it only does things good to be into the cauldron. You know, with the Saturn criterion, is it equal Mars and Venus? Is it equal humans and the rest of, you know, our kin on this planet? Does it guide people to their own autonomy? And is trickster, disruptive, unique creativity welcome? Yes, we let it out. No, we throw it back in for another round of bubbling. And just as a fun thing, you know, just everything speaking to us, you know, we're all in this dream. So do people here mostly know who Megan Rapinoe is? No. Yes, all right, okay. Just a fantastic earned mudra. And I just want to bring her up as an astrological teacher to us. So I do not follow most, you know, whatever, but I did see her saying, I'm not going to the bleeping White House early on. She's the co-captain of the women's soccer team, but an extraordinary, dedicated Saturn person and, you know, confidence, embodied, earned confidence. So I was going, I wonder what she is, you know, oh, she's a Cancer, but there's got to be a lot of Mars, Sun-Mars conjunction in Cancer, like we have a Sun-Mars in Virgo. And it's Jade Jacobs' wonderful ancestor, Jade Jacobs quip, a Cancer is just a Scorpio in a housecoat. It's so good. It's such a good, true joke. It's so good. Because all signs have their PR, right? Cancer's like, I'm very sensitive. I'm just, eat you. I was so impressed by her focused interview, her Saturn thing, and the hardship that she's endured, and her love for her brother who's been in and out of prison, and her love for prisoners, and just as an incredibly interesting person. And so on the very day of the fourth global championship, Saturn is at 17 degrees of Capricorn, opposite her Mars at 17 Cancer, right? And I thought, all right, let's liberate the old fogey astrologers, you know, who go, oh, don't go in a car accident, you know, and maybe, no, the answer to Saturn is like deeper dedication. You know, it's true that Trump was tweeting, you know, but she goes, she just had her magnetic field. It's like the Art of Peace says, do not stare at your enemy's weapon, he will terrify you. Do not gaze into his eyes, he will mesmerize you. Create your own magnetic field, and then you can be wherever you want. And she really did that. And I love that because a wonderful colleague of mine says, Saturn transits, uh-oh, might get something done. Oh, no. No. And again, deeper dedication. And I think, see, with Saturn says, depression too shallow. Still too shallow. Go deeper. You know, especially as it's going into this kind of Plutonian realm. So for the longest time, I've been really interested in the underworld and redemption. So I like Virgo as the whole realm of microdosing. And there's microdosing entheogens, entheogenic plants that really want to help us out. That's part of the Uranus and Taurus dynamic. And then I love also herbalist Karen Sanders says, you can microdose everything. And she said, sometimes I get a little tired of the ayahuasca heads, you know, the fetishization. And she goes, you know, you can microdose mugwort. The micro is really interesting. And what they found about cannabis is that a dose that alleviates pain, good. If you double it, it halves the efficacy. And if you triple it, there's no pain relief at all. We go, these are adaptogenic, interesting, intelligent, you know, beings. And we do say part of the responsibility and opportunity of humans is to borrow qualities of intelligence from our kin. We might also say that part of our task as pattern trackers is to discern the pattern of evolutionary intelligence, the liveliest and most liberating possibility available at any moment, and offer ourselves to that. So I think of the eighth house in so many ways also. How many people here have seen The Cave of Forgotten Dreams? A fabulously interesting nobody documentary. So even just to mention it is kind of good. So it was a documentary by a grumpy Werner Herzog, who was perfect because he wasn't like a new age guy imposing stuff. And he got access to the oldest cave paintings in the world. So you can see him and his crew being moved by wonder. There are fantastic galloping horses, sometimes with multiple legs, so by torchlight they would appear to be galloping. The ancients had flip books and movies, thank you very much. 5,000 years later, somebody painted another horse next to the first horse. And so again, the anthropologists would go, nomads had very little culture. They gathered in the same place for 5,000 years, you whippersnapper dingbat. And so there's 20,000-year-old flutes made of antler. There's these fantastic paintings. There's a fire pit. And so you can see Herzog go, oh, and you can see him seeing it. So clearly people gathered here, and they would play music, and they would shadow dance between the fire with the cave paintings, right? So the Death and Resurrection Show, a really good book, you know, the history of why people gather, says, you know, people would gather, this is all eighth house, to invite in power. We don't source power, we invite it. And we offer it a template, an incarnational template. It's what's going on at solstices and equinoxes throughout time. O literal and symbolic light of sun, come on in and illuminate this writing, this painting at the back of the cave. This is the story we want to animate, right? And so this is all very strong now. Again, what is it? The purpose of art, Venus, look at the exact Venus 14, Virgo exactly trine Saturn at 14 Capricorn, which is the tending for ill children degree, right? And looking at the churlishness and out of syncness of our outsourced demonic leadership. And so part of my offering to see if it resonates with you is that right now I'm quite interested in the model also of possession, not to spook ourselves out, but just there's a collective mind. So as Dion Fortune wants us to spiral blessings, and we want to do that today, into group mind, and that's the only way to go, because we're dealing with the darkest form of black magic. And when Trump was well, one on Kristallnacht, you know, but also was inaugurated. I asked the I Ching, I go, "Hey, Ching," you know, how to think of it. And I'd never gotten this one before. It said, "This is the darkest form of black magic in which five venomous creatures were put in a jar until one of them killed and ate the others." I'm like, that's pretty good. That's a pretty, thank you, I Ching. We'll get right back to you. So, you know, it's my favorite I Ching by Stephen Karcher, because he's taken it back before Confucius into the underworld ghost river and the much more lively forms that I think we need now. Because, you know, how are we to participate? I hosted Ari Mizma, an important esoteric scholar, you'll know his name, whose recent book is Dark Star Rising, Magic and Power in the Era of Trump. And what he's a serious esoteric scholar throughout history, and he says, you know, the dynamic that we must know and for which we are uniquely equipped by our dedication is that, you know, Trump cipher, monkey on a golden chain, the Bannon people, the Koch people, the whatever, they are trained esotericists in the power of images and symbol and the inviting of the worst into mob mind. So it's a monstrosity that feeds on cruelty, and it feeds on polarity, anger, heat, and strife. So the evolutionary dynamic is they do horrible things that make us, and then they feed on that. So it behooves us to metabolize, to invite in the wrathful Dakinis, right? Let all mythic figures be understood as metaphoric animations of intrinsic intelligence in nature. So the wrathful Dakinis are that in nature which metabolizes poison and makes poisonous allies, which is also part of our assignment, you know, to do this. So how many people here have heard of the wrathful Dakinis? All right, they've heard of you. Okay. So it's said that the wrathful Dakinis, they laugh and dance as they feast on the painful negativity that the unenlightened would take to be like a problem. And they transform the toxin of anger into the tonic of wrath, which is fierce protection of community, right? And they transform the poison of seduction and cook it into the tonic of magnetism, bring everything alive, right? So everything has a liberating or constraining quality. Everything can be practiced as a prison. You know, and as we're reviewing all of our old vows, and it's such a powerful time to do that, and the vows our ancestors had to make to survive the Inquisition, Ioannis chimes in and says, "We are big gods dancing with you all. We don't care what you do. We care the manner in which you do it, that it come from freedom and choice. And then whatever you do is going to fly." So hiding is prison. Solitude is freedom. They can look the same, but they feel different, right? So into the cauldron, hiding. It's really olly olly income free now. The entire history of kick-butt storytelling women is in this chart, right? Regardless of our gender assignment, you know, it's there. It's the only air planet. That's right, and laughter erupts in the next room. It's the only air planet is the moon in Libra, right? And that would be the me part of all of us, in a sense, you know, the storytelling woman, bringing that into play. And what was I about to say? I'm going to count on you guys, just for the fun. Oh, so If it is a monstrosity that feeds on polarity, then we get to make some vows in our hearts now. Why wait to do magic? I can suggest some, but it really is everyone's manifesto of dedicated devotion, what we are dedicated to. And I would suggest that we be willing to be agents of cool response in a hot, reactive world. Out there on social media, I'm like, please don't feed the Dementors. Because it's like, tantrum yoga, we call it. And it's like, no, I've got to cook it. I hosted a really wonderful woman on radio a couple weeks ago, great ally, Susan Shannon. She runs the Tibetan Buddhist Prison Ministry in San Quentin. And our theme for the radio show, it's very Saturn-Pluto for all of us, is people who engage in tremendous transformation under extreme limitation of circumstance, of difficulty, of prison, whatever. And she said, you know, we don't glamorize any of these things, but she said the power of the men's authenticity working in San Quentin and on death row, and I know some of those people, she said, is a blessing to the entire community. you know, it's authentic works that's being done. And they have a program called GRIP, Guiding Rage into Power, right? And it's a 52-week program for prisoners. They've graduated, and it's very powerful. And it's about laying down, again, just something I can't do justice to when Susan told the story of this man. Again, it's his story, but it's a man in prison with a life sentence, you know, and he says, you know, I see these young kids I knew on the street coming in to prison. And after a while, they become great guitarists and great artists. And he said, you know, and this is so moving, you know, it seems to me that if everyone just took a pause, the world would be much better. And I think that's part of the Neptune dynamic of right now. You know, it's like, pause, be available to mystery. Certainty is a modern booby prize. It's a very fluid field. There is no fixed future. You know, it's navigational, whatever. And you know, and even on the space out level, because I've been fairly spacey, we call on everything. And I love the invocation of Saint Anthony. Tony, look around. Help me find what I need found. Right? It really works because it's like, where is this bottle? Oh, it's here. I see. Right? But it's also, you know, everything micro and macro. It's like, you know, what is the thing we need? Tony, look around. Help us find what we need found. Ancient wisdom. That's right. Ancient wisdom derived from nature. Oh, we almost forgot about it. Oh my God. So, I think, you know, everybody's customized underworld. So for a long time, you know, I would go to entheogenic journeying groups. I'm an entheogenic enthusiast of psychoactive plants. But I would find in a lot of the groups that people were still like, oh, my mother was mean to me when I was five. I'm like, come on, is this Hinayana honky in a hot tub? I mean, where's the dedication to a larger thing? Where's the availing ourselves of this magic? And everybody was talking about their trauma, right? And this is a complex subject, but my trauma. Some people couldn't remember what their trauma was, but they knew it was bigger than everybody else's. And some people, you know, really had been through a difficult thing. So I said, all right, language craft. How about next time we are tempted to use the word trauma, we replace it with the phrase, my dangerous, beautiful assignment. Okay. And it does very interesting, liberating things. Some people were like, no, I want trauma. But they came back the next day, right, and said, that was really interesting. Change the language, even just a small bit. See how we feel, our own autonomy. Because I think this is a really true thing. This is something I've test driven. I know it is true for me, that redemption lies in brewing medicine for others. You know, and it's also part of the shadow that we know, but in segueing from Nadia's, you know, relationship presentation, the things we keep with us, you know, and where we're just danced into place by our dedication. So I had a woman in office, you know, who was in a dangerous marriage, right? I mean, physically violent, dangerous, and couldn't leave for all the reasons we understand. And I just said, okay, but all women in similar circumstance are counting on you. She was like, what? The team's counting on me? Well, believe in hell, just going back out of restraining order. We will do for others what we wouldn't do for ourselves. It's a hidden, beautiful Neptune Pisces goodness. And to speak to that, and see, that's the campaign, that's the election, that's the political thing. It's story crafting, invitational, all-inclusive. And back to the Chinese detective novels, they said, if you are authentic, if you aspire to be a real person in the underworld, then bad people will come up to you and go, I was going to rob you, then kill you, but I sense that you're authentic, so I want to join your team. You have a better story, and I have underworld skills you will need. Right? This is very, very now. I talked to NSA whistleblowers who were like, we did terrible things for 40 years, but now, welcome, come on over here, help us with hacking. Again, everybody, you know, with discernment, you know, discernment, because there's so many stories, you know, look at the Jupiter square, Neptune, T-square thing, so many stories, so certainty is a booby prize. Let's throw certainty into the cauldron and ladle out ever greater curiosity. Because nobody minds being asked, did you know? Right? It's a non-polarizing question, unless we're snarky about it. Did you know? You know, and then just to be informed, because there's so many levels of news and stories and myth, it's not do you like this candidate or not, it's like, what's the multi-layers of the dynamic coming into play? You know, did you know that Kamala Harris and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez are Sun and Libra, Moon and Aries, Full Moon? You know, and that her, anyway, there's a whole lot to say about her. I have the greatest of admiration. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, but also the more open we are. Did you know that Pete Buttigieg's father was the premier translator of Antonio Gramsci, one of the premier socialist, communist, left-wing thinkers? It's an amazing thing. And that he grew up, you know, and that his father was one of the main speakers at socialist conferences around the world. And at that table was Edward Said, and extraordinary people, and that's who little Pete grew up with. We all just, there's a lot in play. And it's not like, oh, I don't like him or I like him. It's like, and I think backstage, like negotiating with coyotes and wolves, you know, backstage is an excellent place to play, to put the dream team candidates, you know, in place, and it needn't be human, you know. Put wolves in charge of the EPA. Put, you know, but I think this dream board mythic playfulness is highly effective and encouraged now. And that idea also of brewing medicine in the underworld as the little fragment note I took, you know, that the medicine gleaned in the underworld can suck the chi out of the monstrosity that feeds on cruelty, fear, misery, and harm. So part of my adventure, right, and my language crafting, I first told my story to my Monday Night Council, in which I said, I have been diagnosed as having inappropriately enthusiastic cells, right? So my job is to out-enthuse them. And my lady parts of, some of them have gone to spirit world, right? So that's the... And so as I dove into this adventure, very Pluto, and it started a while, you know, because Pluto adventures are never ones we go, oh, I'd like to do that one. It's usually like, oh, God, no, well, okay. We go, magic is a willingness to cooperate with everything. So the micro and the macro, we're all in our dream together. So in our customized underworld, in which we can throw things into the cauldron and ladle things out, but it is our assignment to metaphorically cooperate with our circumstance. So I was very interested from the get-go in Saturn, in the autonomy of language, you know, how it was phrased. And I talked to lots of, there are so many people who've been on this adventure, you know, and everybody's got a story and an opinion and a thing, and it's a huge industry, you know, full of wizards and sketchiness and all about cooperating with poison, you know, and that model going, because at first when you hear the protocol going, all right, well, now we want you to go into 5 weeks of radiation, 5 days a week with chemo at the beginning and the end, and then we want you to do, you know, four rounds of double chemo, and then I go, no, well, okay, how do we cooperate? So the primary characteristic of inappropriately enthusiastic cells is a lack of respect for boundaries, right? So we have a Saturn theme, and we go, is this an issue anywhere in the world, we wonder? It's the Trumpian, Bolsonaro, the fascist thing, it's the whatever. Remember Johannes Torrens, the last time, you know, late 30s in Europe, fascism, in America, New Deal, right? Now it's almost the reverse, right? but what we didn't have the last time, which is what all of us are here as wizards and wizardesses with a long lineage behind us of knowledge and language and plants and forming alliances, and to be humble that we humans can't possibly solve this horror we've inflicted, you know, on our kin by ourselves. It's by ourselves that got us into this pickle, right? So I'm wildly enthused about Uranus and Taurus as what I call democratic animism. Wheel and deal, form working alliances. Whatever we love loves us, you know. And it's that trickster. See, living with the coyote for 19 years, I unabashedly earned my trickster degree of backstage confidence. And coyotes, no shame, right? Dogs, we've taught shame. Coyotes, no shame. It's all bargaining, and it's all telepathic bargaining. You know, if I give you two of this, how about one of this? Okay, it's all wheel and deal, and it's what it's voodoo. You know, it's what anthropologists call transactional spirituality, right? Yeah, but it's a pragmatic mysticism, and I think that's so here, right? This pragmatic mysticism, this grand trine going right. Let's apply everything. You know, and experiment. So just to honor Uranus, you know, and with Stella Coyote, we created our creation myth. You know, we say, long before there were humans, there was trickster, right? We're gonna go, nature's evolutionary experimental genius has no category about success, fail, just try that thing. Nope, try that thing, yes. So long before there were humans, trickster sets the whole shebang going with a sizzle of lightning. And the sizzle of uniqueness goes through every plant, every flora, fauna, everything, and every now and then it gets imprisoned, inquisitioned, orthodoxed, which means straight teachings, bamboozled, right? So it becomes ingenious escape artist. Ingenious escape artist. It's life's triumphant ingenuity, right? And it sizzles all the way into us right now at this Grand Trine, going, it's our unique playful. You know, sociopaths never play. Murderers have no play in their background. Play is the thing that lights up our brain. This rewedding of all that's been falsely estranged, I went to a really good Kennedy Center thing in which Francis Collins, head of NIH, was presenting with musicians, you know, music and healing, right? Look at the Virgo, Venus Virgo again downloading, you know, the ancestors look at our modern world going, what are you guys talking about that there's art over there and healing over there? What the hell are you, you cannot have one without the other. You know, there is no art without healing. There is no healing without art. You know, so, and what was the thing I was about to say? Ah! Thank you. That's exactly perfect. Right, so Francis Collins did a couple of great things that stayed with me. One is he said, when we hear music, and we might say eloquence as well, you know, and we might expand this also to birdsong, or when we hear music that gives us goosebumps, our brain cascades, you know, dopamine and endorphin, just poof. In contrast to when we use the word fight, our brain's all symbolic, go. So how long will we have war? As long as we keep having war metaphors. So I myself want to throw all war metaphor language into the cauldron just to give it a rest. And that means the word vulnerable, in which people have been conned into thinking that was a virtue. Love makes you vulnerable. It's like, no, obsession makes you vulnerable. Vulnerable is a battlefield term. It means woundable, right? It's not a virtue. It's a description, maybe, but anyway, so throwing, and also so many people, you know, have come up to me going, we heard you're battling with cancer, and I go, no, battles are lost. I'm cooperating with the dance, right? There we go. And the realm of people's stories. But anyway, yes, Francis Collins, thank you. So he said, the surge of dopamine, right? So any words we say, any music we hear, there's an intimate physiological download. We're requesting all the time. We don't need more powers, but to use our considerable wizard and wizardess language craft powers that we already have. You know, when people go, oh, I'm sick and tired, it's like, no, don't do that. Don't do that. Throw that into the cauldron. And also, you know, I want to get two birds stoned on one scone, right? I mean, we want to just play with all of the all tired metaphors, all tired language into the cauldron. There's no prison for the unexpected. And I my moon's in Virgo. I get pretty spicy, and I'm consulting also Dorothy Parker, you know, because part of the adventure to the underworld is how she answered her phone. What fresh hell is this, right? So there is, for all of us, we go to what fresh hell is this news. But I also, I'm quite happy with lots of things I'm becoming, because Dorothy Parker said, I get up every morning and I brush my teeth and sharpen my tongue. I go, yeah, I think it's a Virgo thing to be spicy, but remember, Virgo, criticism, healing, criticism, diagnosis, healing, right? That it's a critique, it's a satirical thing, but it's purpose. And that's why, you know, the metabolizing of poison, I think of a great ancestress, Nalita Anderson, raised from birth as a kahuna, and she said, you know, we had to learn poison and harm in our training, and she said not to use them, but in the body of a person or the culture, the killing points are the same as the healing points. The difference is intention. And I always kept that as like, ooh, that's spicy. So see the Saturn dedication right now? It's like the backstage ancestor gods say, we know all of you are good-hearted people, but we'd like an internal pledge this hour that your skills are for healing, not harming. Just take that vow, right? Just in one's heart, you know, ashe, may it be so. So Francis Collins then showed a man with advanced Parkinson's, which is a dopamine thing, who could barely walk and barely open the door, right? And then he said, all we did was put on a metronome, very Saturn, right? And the man is walking, and he opens the door with a metronome. Saturn. And I love the band Inquis that has this powerful lyric. It says, we had little, we have all been close to death. Then we found rhythm, and now we have much. It's a very Saturn thing. It's a Saturn dynamic. So then he wheeled an opera singer into the MRI. And he said, now sing an aria, right? And these fantastic parts of her brain lit up. And then here's the mystery part. He said, now don't sing, imagine singing. And the entire brain went, imagination lights up more of the brain than doing it. And we go, these are mystery. These are just, how interesting, you know? These are things to wonder about. And I think the Eighth House Council says, oh, look at these humans, how wonderful, they've run out of certainty. What an advanced accomplishment in a primitive age. Now mystery can find them. You know, and so Neptune says, you know, to all of us, we recommend you run on the fuel of wonder. I wonder what the hell, you know, I wonder what the thing is. And metaphoric, you know, cooperation. Right, so all the Virgo tricks, you know, that we know, I think are so powerfully potent now. I love the Virgo square to Jupiter in Sagittarius, you know, which is small things tell big stories, and vice versa, you know, and the details are important. I'm very fond of squares and sesquiquadrates. I'm very happy that Mercury has a 135 degree angle to Pluto there. It opens it up going, now let's do, what shall we do together? This council disguised as a, in this Asclepion run by Chiron, disguised, compellingly disguised as a Hyatt, right? You know, what wants to come on through? What shall we invite? And again, see, Venus magnetizes, Mars animates, and together they spiral it into the world. And we have a Venus-Mars marriage, or, you know, cahooting in the underworld. They're so close to the sun, we don't see them, which is pretty cool in the part of this, exact trine to Saturn. So public conversations, may we all be agents of public conversations in defining things. You know, and I do cross borders. I talk to right-wingers. I went to the Republican convention. I've been to the underworld in many forms, right? You know, and asking people to define things is really useful. One, it's unexpected, right? And there's no prison for the unexpected. So I was talking to there's no climate crisis, and you know, the press is too mean to Trump, and he's good. You know. And I said, well, you know, what is your definition of wise governance? And he's like, And I said, well, you know, we might say the purpose of government is, and he joined in with me, to protect the Commonwealth. And I go, all right, brother. He's like, wow, okay. Defining things, what is wise leadership? What is your definition of wise governance? Because but definitely the Uranus and Taurus dynamic, it's neck and neck, but there are so many great humans who are now getting, you know, attention and funding and everything, and like buddy Paul Stamets, and this is the whole realm of biomimicry. People familiar with this term? This is essential to us being who we are. Janine Benyus, this fabulous woman, founder of Biomimicry Institute, said, rather than looting nature, why don't we borrow nature's recipes? You know, beautiful, exquisite patterns, highly influential, really great stuff. Just on a simple level, the recent one was, you know, on a small level, but it's huge. So the Japanese high-speed bullet train was coming out of tunnels and with a sonic boom and breaking people's windows and stuff. So they go to the Biomimicry Institute, and Janine goes, what in nature changes fields with little turbulence? Let's look at the kingfisher bird that might be extinct, but the kingfisher bird that dives into water without a splash. So they redesign the front of the Japanese high-speed train as a kingfisher bird entering water, and it emerges from the tunnel without any perturbation, just right. And these are things that people love. We love this. Again, ingenuity and design. You know, all the great kind of social guys, William, his name will come back to me, but in all of his lectures, he says, the ship crossing the ocean, who's in charge? And people go, the captain, the whatever, and he goes, nope, the designer, it's Venus. And all of the issues we face are design issues. If we're going to, again, root out the sneaky, intrinsic colonialism of speciesism as humans as more important than anything, I don't know how many of you were at UAC, but our ally, oh, names, to take some more vitamin B12. Rick Tarnas, thank you, somebody I've known. Right, he did a kind of Dane Rudyar chart, which is important. Very briefly, he goes, okay, we go way back, because we want to revisit some forks in the road that got us into this pickle, right? And it's all deeply connected. Even just madcap aside over here, I loved being on Twitter with a person when the Epstein, it's sad we celebrate no one's death. you know, suicide came in, and I said, oh, Barr is going to investigate, sure. And a Twitter ally said, Epstein was finished off by Epstein-Barr, you know, by complications from Epstein-Barr, right? And then she said, what do you think they left in his cell for him to hang himself with? And I go, a very long red tie. Anyway, so that was good. All right, back to forks in the road, right? So that's one. But again, he couldn't live. I don't know if you've tracked it. It's like we want standards of conspiracy. There are real conspiracies, and then people have discredited it. Epstein was managing Mohammed bin Salman's billions of dollars. It was tied into, you know, Jewish philanthropy and crooks. I mean, just he knew too much. But anyway. But that's an Eighth House thing. Anything that anybody wants to know, right, is highly likely. I always ask Eighth House people, you know, were you born into a family of secrets? And they're like, well, you know, and then they list 800 and they go, yeah, good point. A family with secrets gives birth to this, right? So all of us are mythic energy detectives, you know, as healers, right? To diagnose, to reveal, you know, and to heal with the power of a unifying story. So there we go. All right. What else was I about to say? Rick Tarnas, thank you. That's excellent. We're working as a team. It's working. Thank you. We all need each other. I'd be nothing without you. Okay, so Rick Tarnas, right. So he gave the image, okay, way back, of humans embedded in intrinsic animistic participatory. Part of why people take entheogens to have that experience of intimacy again. Then he goes, okay, and then we get pyramids, right? Great learning, Egyptian trigonometry, really great stuff, but we're getting a priesthood. And I'm suggesting we throw all priesthoods into the cauldron, right? I love Marsilio Ficino, my astrological ally, who was berating the astrologers of Florence for creating a priesthood, you know, and he goes, that's not what this is for. This is about guiding cooperation with the larger, you know, intelligence of the everything. So then we get the pyramids and everything, and we've got a priesthood, and we begin to get humans, rah-rah. And it was another guest on my show who said, you know, it was 3,000 years ago that the Greeks began tossing all their animal deities for human deities. I'm like, we might want to revisit that too, you know, because then, you know, in Tarnas' model, then we get cathedrals, like, you know, and it is very much humans, rah-rah, absolutely, you know, and much learning, an extraordinary thing. I love meeting this wonderful Rabbi White, who seemed quite playful, and so I said to him in our arranged tea conversation, I go, I think of the Abrahamic religions as shipwrecks on which beautiful corals and some barnacles have grown. He goes, that's perfect. And I go, you are a fun rabbi. Right, but, you know, again, so we like the beauty, and there's so many interesting things to dive into, so I'm going completely spacey here for a moment because as thoughts just occur, just bear with me. Because I also hosted this great guy, Terrence Ward, who grew up in Saudi Arabia and Egypt, and his niece said, explain ISIS to us. You know, what is this in the modern world? Because Saudi Arabia, very important part of all of us knowing about this. So his book is that. And he says, few Westerners know that before 1928, Mecca was a global place of tolerant, Sufic, dance, ecstasy, beautiful Islamic tradition. And in 1928, the Sauds, Wahhabis move in, right? And they literally pave over paradise. They take the prophet's daughter's house and put a parking lot there. They destroy the past as a place for pilgrimage. You know, and they take over with fear and money. And it's important to understand that dynamic because anybody running for president not only has to deal with the Russia, the Saudi Arabia, the Israeli, the Koch brothers, the whatever. It's a trickster move. You know, it's going to take working with sparrows and nature and everything to pull this off. But it's an important thing to know. You know, again, complexity. So where are we being distracted from? The Saudi Arabia thing is, we just put it there for everybody's further detective work according to affinity of what we kind of put out here. The Virgo craft, so Virgo is called the ruler of ritual magic, right? The micro to the macro. And our dangerous, beautiful assignment as connected. So when I heard that the primary characteristic of dangerous cells with a lack of respect for boundaries, I'm going, this is powerful. And I have a number of fellow journeyers on this journey because it's really fairly common, you know. And I said, okay, so when I go into the radiation, magic's a willingness to cooperate with everything. And it's very trippy because for 6 months before all this kind of occurred or unfolded, I'd been lecturing because I was going to co-teach a dance astromythology with this wonderful woman, Banafshe, in Turkey, and we taught there before. And it was on the full moon Taurus Scorpio. So for months I was doing video stuff with her going, and this is such a powerful full moon. This is the incarnational vessel in which invisible energy comes into the Taurus glyph, which is the womb and the fallopian tubes and its original impulse, and how powerful as an opportunity for incarnation or whatever. So it turns out I couldn't go on that trip, but I was lying under with my legs open in a posture of sexual receptivity to this invisible machine. I go, wow, talk about literalizing metaphors. So you can fall into other people's narrative in which you go, oh my God, this is a horrible thing. And it's like, no, magic is a willingness to cooperate with everything, right? So it's like, okay, so it's swirling, snake dancers, Sufi Aikido, right? And what does everything want? It wants liberation. And I go, oh, rogue cells in my body and the body politic. He swept into this cauldron of transformative oblivion and laid aloud. And another extraordinary friend of mine, who's an amazing woman, who's Médecins Sans Frontières, who, when she was in Africa, meets a young woman who's the only survivor of her village, who's pregnant with a rape. And my friend is about to leave, but makes sure that she has a place to stay and food and a place to give birth and everything, and they become quite close. And we astrologically become quite close and are even there by video when the baby Faith is born out of this horror. and due to some miracle, my friend, Lucia, she's gotten a job at an Alaska medical clinic, and she gets this young woman, the only survivor of her village, and her baby, citizenship green cards. And so they come from Africa to Alaska, whereupon my friend is diagnosed with metastatic breast cancer. And I go, oh, Liz, okay, what is it? Underworld, she's working it. And so when I gave her the image going, all right, imagine everyone who's ever been at a difficult diagnosis or was frightened of it or whatever, is in fact, this is medicine brewing. It's like my friend who works with the prisoners. You know, the most powerful medicine is brewed in the underworld. And my friend Lucia said, great image, you know, that the cells in our bodies and the body politic, you know, go into the cauldron. And she goes, and may they be reborn as that which we can regenerate the forest. So I'm going, good imaginative move. All right, let's go. Let's prime this pump of playing, right? So we put down the whaley and all. It is Bodhisattva Coyote's underworld tour that we're all kind of on in a customized way, you know, and to brew medicine. Like the woman who wouldn't leave her husband for herself but would for the team. You know, and so for all of us, we go, well, everyone in similar circumstance is counting on you. You know, and it's like, all right. Because part of the invitation and that wants to supplant and guide what passes for politics is the invitation to co-create an irresistible unifying story. And I'm so impressed by, you know, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and the four other congresswomen who were like so spicy and deft and always bring it back to we. I mean, really impressive, you know. And just, you know, again, America is so backward, right? But a friend was saying, think of all of the women prime ministers now, Denmark, Iceland, New Zealand, Slovakia, Germany, Thailand, Argentina, they might be dodgy right-wingers, but you know, Ellen Johnson in Liberia, Costa Rica, Finland, Lithuania, Trinidad and Tobago. We go, right, there's some kick-butt women out there, you know, and in all of us as well. I think it's democratic animism. We need the awakened imagination of everybody. So in the underworld, our craft is our craft. Max Dashu reminds us that the word craft means power from dedication. And of course, it's our little boat as well, right? And as my buddy Robert Bly says, you know, as one of his latest poems is, you know, we deserve to receive help for keeping our small boats afloat when so many have gone down in the storm. It's like, yeah, it's poignant. But our craft is our craft. And so I've been talking, I mean, I like what's happening to me. There's a deeper kind of dynamic with all the astrological work I'm doing, like, oh, hello, let's get really, really interesting and detective tracking and complicity. You know, I think this is one of our great guiding skills, you know, complicity, not shame, not blame, but whatever's going on, we're contributing creative chi to it. And once we see that, we have freedom to inhale our chi from a particularly undesirable story and exhale it into a better one. But the acknowledging of complicity. So a friend of mine recently was going, oh, you know, the Inquisition, you know, I was falsely accused of terrible things or whatever. And we go, right. And we go, it doesn't have to be true, but we go, we wonder why you might have been directing the movie that way. And he goes, oh, and then there was all kinds of interesting things. And I go, well, we want to throw any Inquisition Velcro receivers we have on our system into the cauldron so that we're no longer hiring things to not go so well, right? Everything a potential dance partner, everything a potential, you know, ally. And that's, again, I think I spoke here, I guess the last time it was here, which is a year and a half ago or so. So I'd already been to the Republican convention, but I did learn a lot. I went to the Democratic one, which was much gloomier. It was much gloomier. It's like, take that, liberals. Oh God, it was horrible. Yeah, the Republicans threw a better party. A more authentic party in a weird way. I mean, no, it was horrific, but they had local beer and local restaurants and local food and convivial place to stay, and the Democrats had, Gino's Pizza, and it's like, oh, come on. Where's Venus? No Venus. There was no Venus there. But the reason I bring it up is that I did one-on-one playful with, right wingers, people with different points of view. I like practicing spiraling out of polarity to finding a story we could agree about. I think this is excellent training. Collectively, it was mob mind scary. It was the hate machine. It was the mob mind. It was what we see. White psychosis is trending, right? Clearly, I mean, you don't even need to have a special edition of a newspaper, right? Just any edition will do. Texas shooting, it's a white boy, Hurricane picture of Dorian Gray, right? I mean, white psychosis is trending, but that's why I want to speak briefly to the model of possession. I have, and this is kind of the Neptunian realms of where we want to be influential and the magic we can open up to. So I have a favorite client, ally, friend, Scorpio 12th house, who is a forensic psychiatrist. And so her job is to go into crime scenes and maintain kinship with the perpetrator. Because she says a wise culture would understand that there is no personal, it's all collective. Pressure comes down and it erupts through psychotic thin membranes and erupts, but it's an important statement to everybody, and a wise culture would want the story. Right? And so I really admire her work. And it's also in mythology, like the journey through the underworld. Milarepa, the greatest saint in all of Tibetan Buddhism, was a murderer and a highwayman. And this theme of redemption seems important. And my own Pluto underworld journey to the exactitude of the thing really began, a year and a half ago when I went to an extremely authentic ayahuasca ceremony led by somebody who really knew what they were doing and knew the beautiful songs and everything. And it was serious preparation. But we're in this riptide, right, of ancient meeting modern and Latin American meeting whatever, and people working on ayahuasca going, well, do you believe in evil spirits? And they go, when I'm in South America, I do, but when I'm in America, I don't. And we go, oh, good and evil, complex things. So there was an aura around our journey. There was a mass murder in Canada. The teacher, the ayahuascaero teacher of our ayahuascaero had been murdered 2 days earlier in Peru by a crazed Canadian. Anyway, so there's a lot, and then the villagers had killed him. So there was a lot of shadowy stuff, right? And I'm talking to our guide saying, well, aren't we teasing medicine and compassion into larger repertoire of responses? And he said, well, it was jungle justice, they had to kill him. And I go, yes, whatever is past, but what about redemptive future? And he said, you mean if he was innocent? And I go, yeah, and I mean if he was guilty. Anyway, so very briefly, I won't impose this on you, but it's kind of just briefly, telegraphically pertinent. Day two, it's an amazing thing, and I don't know what I think about this particular sacrament at all, but I went to the heart of evil. I went to a psychic psychotic where I was inside and I understood the explosive volatility of possession in which you just do something terrible. I was right there. When everybody came out, they were like, I had a journey with Mother Ayahuasca and she said I was the greatest shaman of all and I should leave my children and wife and move to the jungle. I'm like, I just went to evil. How are you getting these people get away with that thing? So later I talked with the guy and he says, well, you're fascinated by the underworld. And I go, well, it's my beat. And he goes, well, you're under-boundaried. I go, okay, fair enough, but I'm just interested in this quality of redemption over and over again. And just to kind of bring it back, to us, and to my friend's prison ministry, in which people, like our ally Jarvis Masters, who's been on death row for 30 years, you know, he's a Buddhist, and he's written these beautiful books, Finding Freedom, Writings from Death Row. And again, in indigenous tradition, the greatest, most powerful blessings are from those most afflicted. And there's so many, you know, and the capacity to step backstage, right? So backstage is a very powerful place for all of us as well, of pragmatic mysticism. One, we call backstage the green room. My friend Catherine Neville found this out, because it's from Greek theater, because it was sacred to Dionysus, the green man. That's why we call it the green room, even though it's hardly ever green, right? And so each actor, regardless of their role, hero or villain, would spend time backstage in the green room before they went on stage, dedicating themselves to the flora and fauna of this earth. We call this great. Backstage is also a place of great negotiations. It's where the Lakota elder, you know, it's where you negotiate with the invisible. I think of the Eighth House as invisible. I don't know how many of you grew up reading the traditional old fogey books, which are useful, but it goes, the Eighth House is death, sex, money, power, investment, banking, and your partners, whatever, in shamanism and Wall Street. And you go, what the hell? What is the theme here? It's the invisible. It's the invisible. It's the backstage. It's everything that was sacred, sex, death, money, power. And as we move into the inquisitional modern world, it becomes taboo. Right? So Eighth House is assigned the task of being fascinated by the taboo, but that's just the first part. It's being attracted to the taboo in order to restore it back to sacred, you know, and to go, let's talk about this stuff. Let's talk about incest. Let's talk about abuse. Let's talk about these things. You know, let's open up the conversation. And I think part of what Neptune would say to all of us, let's say it's whispering in our crafty ears, all the craft we've developed and all of the ancestors with which we feel intimate and with which we're willing to invite, going, humbled. You know, the word human comes from humus, dirt, from which we get the word humble. We're meant to be humble in the dirt people, going, help, collaborative dynamic. You know, we are willing to humbly cooperate with nature's guiding genius. And I think, last little bits, and that is also, you know, poisonous allies, homeopathy and all, and you know, how do you cooperate with poison, and how do you know you're on the right track when one's internal self and many allies are like, oh my God, you know, and again, trickster, metaphoric magic is always there. My cat brought a copperhead poisonous snake into the house, right? And I was like, what are you playing with, kitty? Oh my God. And I did call my neighbor who'd moved away, going, oh my God, there's a snake. I went completely girly. Oh, there's a snake in the bathroom. So first move the cat, you know, and it's like, all right. You know, and I approached the snake going, all right, I know you don't have arms, but put your arms up and back away. Nobody gets hurt. Okay, I think, here we go. There we go. And put your little dustbin, and there you go, your little dustbin. And a visiting friend said, ooh, what a great dream, because everything's a dream now. The poisonous snake came into your house but did not harm your cat or you. And I go, right, right. Again, poisonous allies, poisonous allies. It's so interesting. You know, and it is also like an underworld tour, and it's good to have buddies and to talk, because again, everybody's been through this, so many people have been through these journeys. And there's so much conversation about, you know, a dear friend said, you know, I know somebody with the exact same diagnosis as you, and she just went and studied with kahunas and shapeshifted into owls. And I go, that's fabulous. I would love to speak with her. Crickets. Yeah. Anyway, so the conversation wants to continue, because no one wants this poison to be the orthodox thing. However, it is an interesting kind of dynamic, and poisonous allies, and the Delphic Oracle says that which harms shall heal. It's all a question of dosage, but also metaphoric invitation and a little bit of spiciness, just to cast us all off, you know, in a moment. We go, you know, possession, white psychosis trending, Dementors thrive on polarity, to dedicate ourselves, Saturn, Neptune, to an ever expanding repertoire of responses. See what's a prison and what's liberating. So to react to anything is not free. It's to carry around a portable prison for oneself and others. And it's hot. You know, and we don't want first reactors, we want first responders, right? Everybody's a first reactor, like, and that's the imprisoning of the mind. Do you approve or disapprove? Do you like this or not like this? Irrelevant. Are you willing to cooperate with it? You know, what does it want to be? How do you offer oneself as a dance partner in some way? How do you willing to give it a to see it in an animated plant or animal form, right? As a and to see us all in our craft, our little boat. So the Virgo qualities that I wanted to mention, small things have a huge effect. Virgo part of all of us feels great when it feels that it is an agent of the beautiful order that suffuses creation. Fabulous. Virgo feels neurotic when it feels that the only order that exists is what it creates, because then it's like, must buy 3 tomatoes and save the world. Oh God, I'll never do it. So into the cauldron, you know, again, that idea of being an agent of order, it's like ritual magic or obsessive compulsive disorder. You know, it's the same kind of a thing. The other thing that I love from The Initiate Brother, a great fantasy book about a syncretized Orient and about how to maintain tranquility of purpose when in the realm of evil, roiling, collapsing empire. So it's relevant. And they have the Bodhis Brotherhood who knows how to slow time down. That's really good. But there's a great moment, okay, a little Virgo moment, where there's a man of great substance and lives are at stake. He's responsible and he retreats to his garden and he doesn't know who to trust or what to do or how to save the world. And his garden, everything is off. Everything just feels off, right? Even the stream in his garden sounds off. So he reaches into the stream and he picks up one small stone and he carefully replaces it, and the stream has its melodious voice restored and his mind clears and he sees who to trust, who not to trust, and how to save the world. And see, I love this as a Virgo quality for us all to take in our magic backpacks. You know, when it's like overwhelming, it's like just move one small stone. Not any stone, right? Here's the Uranus Taurus. It's the stone that wants to be moved, which we know. We have incredible spatial dancing choreography for humans to rejoin the choreography of creation. And Neptune whispers to everybody here, imagine that the deepest, most soulful, most previously shamed, you know, part of you, but beautiful, is about to be completely collectively welcome. It wants to be a, you know, and that we be agents of that. A slightly sketchy but still interesting kind of entheogenic leader once said, because they go, he said, Caroline, you're very safe. And I go, oh, what do you mean? You know, because some grumpy members had said, you break rules, you make us unsafe. And I go, I don't know. But he said, people are safe to be themselves in your presence. And I go, yeah, absolutely. I mean, we love that, don't we? There's nothing more fun than actual honesty. You know, and to maybe even cross the line a little bit and have the other person or ourselves take it. And it's like, oh, that's just the best. Have spicy truth-telling critique back and forth, and you know, to do anything less is infantilization. To think that somebody couldn't handle the truth is to infantilize. And part of the Uranus dynamic, because remember Uranus ingenuity and inventiveness and nature's, you know, against all odds, part of us that loves against all odds. And the last ideas associated with Uranus are democracy, equality, synchronicity. And I love wondering, like, what do they have to do with each other? As soon as I wondered that, synchronous events made it really clear that when we look down at somebody or up at somebody, there's no magic. When we restore equality, meaning we all have different roles on stage or backstage, but really the only way is, hey, how you doing? Straight across. Synchronicity increases dramatically. So for our sporting transformation of culture, it means the Dementors of Doom. Mentors are the antidote to Dementors. That's a whole other Chiron lecture, right? So Dementors of Doom, you know, more money, more greed, more corruption, maybe we're throwing it into the cauldron, but no magic. There's the black magic. These talks could go on all day. But we, if we have ally etiquette, if we treat each other with respect, which means to look again, respect again, we keep respecting, going on there, then we have magic synchronicity. Then our internal dedication, which we might make even now, you know, can be as simple as we don't know what to do or where to be, dance us into a place where we can do the most good, have the most fun, and contribute the most good possible. We go, that'll do. That's all. Cooperators are standing by. That's all they want. They go, all right, let's dance those people into place. You know, that would be great. You know, we do need to follow the dark mythos to brew the antidote. That's a whole other crucial lecture. There we go. But, yeah, and Trump's use of the word nasty, which is so kinky. God. The last little bits. Right, this last little bit I got from Dan Brown, because I'm not proud. But he quotes Antoni Gaudi, right? Nothing is invented, for it's written in nature first. Originality consists of returning to the origin. This is very Jornus Torres. Sir Herbert Reed said, only those serving an apprenticeship to nature can be trusted with technology. Abe Lincoln said many great things, but I also love, he said, I care not for any man's religion whose dog and cat are not the better for it. Go Abe, it's really great. So our vows, you know, whatever we form in our heart now, even kind of rushing to relax towards this end of our convening, to partner with what we love, it's incarnational actuality, it's against all odds, and it's again our capacity to respond to aggravation as a guide. Just last little bit, my great friend Heather Rowan Roundtree, she took me to this great tree in New Mexico and said, this tree is an amazing story. She goes, I was sitting under it and there was this fly that just wouldn't let up, like, and she was trying to kill it. And finally she got up and moved, and 30 seconds later, lightning struck that tree. Boom! And she was like, thank you, aggravating fly. You know, a trickster comes in many guiding forms if we respond. I love that. You know, so thank you for co-animating this powerful chart, that we have the agents of cool response in a hot, reactive world. Deliberate is a wonderful word for chaos. And just to end, you know, in reciprocal blessing, that we're all in this dream together, everyone brewing medicine, you know, in their customized underworld. And I love in Terry Pratchett the phrase, yantan tethra, dispelled delusion, yantan tethra. And we love from the circus, alley-oop. Alley-oop is when we give each other an assist, alley-oop. So we might say, alley-oop, alley-oop, alley-oop. And then this beautiful Eritrean word, aizan, which means power and blessing for a dangerous, worthy adventure before you. You know, may it go well to everybody. Aizan. Thank you, team. Thank you. Oh, hey, yes. Also, and a fantastic opportunity from Baltimore to Bali. Yeah, Rick Levine and I are co-teaching in Bali. It's a fantastic thing. It's an unusual experiment. We're completely different, but we like each other a lot. So we have flyers. There's still room. Step right up.